This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Judge Roy Moore is facing new allegations of sexual misconduct. He denies them and has rejected calls to withdraw as the Republican Senate candidate in a special election in Alabama. The latest allegations come after the Washington Post revealed last week that one woman alleged Moore initiated a sexual encounter with her when she was only 14 years old. Catherine Lawson saw that report and had a visceral reaction. Today, she's an attorney based in Raleigh. She took to Twitter to share her thoughts, saying, "Can't consent at 14, not in Alabama, not anywhere." She added the hashtag #MeAt14. Her post, along with that hashtag, has since gone viral. Celebrities like Katie Couric, Sarah Silverman have shared their own photos and stories. Catherine Lawson is a Raleigh-based lawyer, and she joins me in the studio now. Catherine, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Take me back. Tell me about what was going through your mind and your reaction that led you to create that handle.
Well, when the report first came out from the Washington Post, obviously it was very disturbing. But for me, what was more disturbing were people, after the report came out, willing to justify the behavior, willing to say either that these relationships could have been consensual, or willing to say that even if, you know, even if this stuff did happen, that it isn't a reason that Moore should drop out of the race or the people shouldn't vote for him. I strongly disagreed with both of those assessments and thought that sharing not only a hashtag, not just kind of a statement, but also a picture of myself when I was 14 was a way to illustrate that there's no acceptable version of this story. Teenagers can't consent to relationships with grown adults.
What kind of response did you get initially?
A much larger response than I ever expected. People came just kind of out of the woodwork from all over the country and all over the world, sharing their not only their pictures but stories of their childhoods that were protected and innocent, but also stories of abuse. And in doing so, so many people have just shown tremendous vulnerability in telling their stories and in trying to push forward this national conversation we're having about abuse and exploitation.
Why are we having this now? Because again, you know, there are all of these stories, more and more coming forward. Your hashtag certainly generated some, but clearly this is something that we're now talking about. I don't know if this question is why had women been silent before, and the other part of that, why now? Why come forward now?
So I view it as a very hopeful statement that people are willing to come forward. I think the reason you don't in the past is either because you internalize the shame of it and you think that it was your fault and so you don't say anything about it, or you think that there's no point because nothing could possibly change because the individual who abused you or the power structures that be are so entrenched that nothing could happen. And I think that as we see people coming forward now, I take it as an indication that people are beginning to believe that that's changing, that the way that we allocate power, the way that we hold powerful people accountable, it is changing to the point where something can actually be done about all of this.
Yeah, and I wonder how the response to the latest wave of allegations has played into that. I mean, we're seeing, you know, Kevin Spacey's movie is withdrawn. Mm-hmm. Once the report reaches the media, we're not waiting to go to court. Louis C.K.'s movie is withdrawn. And you have Mitch McConnell, Republican senator, saying not just Roy Moore, you should withdraw from the race because this is, you know, too dangerous. I believe her, he said. How much of that of an impact do you think that kind of immediate response and reaction is having?
I think it has a huge impact. I think it is a tremendous vote of confidence in the women who are coming forward. It's a vote of confidence in the quality of reporting that we're getting, that these aren't just kind of gossip magazines telling stories from behind the corner, but these are people coming forward on the record, verified as much as you can in these types of stories, and people saying, you know what, this is more likely true than not, and that is worth paying attention to, and it's worth listening to.
Actually, you said something very important, the idea that this is not just a gossip story. This is actually, in many cases, can amount to a criminal offense, but certainly something that is so offensive to women that it constitutes a kind of a crime. So are we seeing things? I guess that's what you just said. We now understand this is not just idle chatter. This is criminal.
Absolutely. And I think it's an important part of the conversation also that whether or not legal charges are brought in all of these situations, we don't have to outsource our own moral judgments in these circumstances. We can, as citizens, as consumers of entertainment, we can look at these reports and we can evaluate them. We can assess their reliability. We can use our judgment then to say, this isn't somebody that I want my money going to for a movie, or this is somebody that I'm not going to vote for. We have agency in how all of this plays out.
What about, you know, I'm thinking back to Donald Trump. He gloated about doing it, that we heard him say that. That's a crime in any state. It's punishable by more than getting your mouth washed out with soap. And yet he got elected. Do you think that had a chilling effect? Just the fact that you can say it out loud and still be elected president?
I think people have been living under a chilling effect for decades upon decades. I think for a lot of people, that was maybe the final straw, and for a lot of women who finally looked and said, you know what, if we don't start telling our story, if we don't come together and share our experiences, this won't change. We have to just keep doing it until people can't look away. I think it's easy for people to want to think that this type of abuse and exploitation doesn't happen very frequently. It's an uncomfortable reality to come to grips with. But I think that we have to come to grips with it. And I think that the more people who come forward, men and women, to share their experiences, to name people when necessary, or even just to say, this happens, be aware, here are the warning signs, here are the things to look out for, that kind of the culmination of all of those stories becomes too hard to ignore.
Do you think, you said that we don't have to check our moral judgment at the door, that this is not necessarily about criminal charges and adjudication in the courts, but some of these cases will go to court. Mm-hmm. If the individuals here are exonerated, if for one reason or another they are acquitted, where do you think that puts us?
So this isn't an area that I personally practice in. The lawyer in me has to give that caveat. I'm sure that for some people it will be disconcerting. It'll be disappointing to have these cases go to court and potentially have and to not have convictions or to have acquittals. My hope would be that when people realize that there is a cost to coming forward to this, it's never guaranteed that the consequences you want will be the consequences that are given. But I hope that there will be good experiences from coming forward, that we as a community will learn to hear these stories well, to respond with compassion, with understanding, and that learning to own one's own story, the good, the bad, and the ugly, including what other people did and the fact that it's their fault, not your own, that is still a valuable thing, and that speaking up from whatever platform you can is valuable.
Do you think that what's happening now will have an enduring effect, or is this just a kind of a flash and it'll be business as usual?
That's always a risk in the world that we live in. We get a say in that. We get to decide whether or not this is a conversation we keep going, whether or not we wait until another horrible story comes out, or whether we start learning now, whether companies start putting into place better rules regarding sexual harassment, whether or not we unelect politicians who abuse their power, whether or not we decide that we're not going to endorse or pay for movies from people who have exploited their coworkers. We get a say in that. And I think that we should continue to have a say in that, both in our practices and in the conversations that we have.
Catherine, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Catherine Lawson is a Raleigh-based lawyer. She started the Me at 14 hashtag in the wake of allegations of sexual assault against U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore. The conversation around sexual assault continues. Senate Democrat Al Franken has apologized after he was accused of kissing and groping a broadcaster without her consent. And the national headlines have also sparked discussions at the state level. Women have come forward in California, Minnesota, and Illinois, among other states, to say a culture of sexual harassment is pervasive in their state legislatures. Jeff DeBerry is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief, and Lauren Horsch is a reporter for the NC Insider, a news service focused on state government. And they've both been looking into the general culture at the North Carolina General Assembly, and they join me now. Jeff, welcome.
Good to be here.
And Lauren, good to see you as well.
Good seeing you too.
So you've been asking women, Lauren, to share their stories with you. What have you been hearing?
I've been hearing a lot of the same things, I think, and Jeff might speak to this later too, but just a culture of handsiness and, you know, comments that are inappropriate. So some of the female lobbyists I've spoken to have said, you know, they haven't had anything blatantly awful happen to them, but they have had male lawmakers and other male lobbyists, you know, say things inappropriately, hit on them during, you know, important meetings when they're trying to get a bill passed, or just, you know, day to day in the halls, or, you know, just had lawmakers touch them, you know, either with an arm around the shoulder or, you know, a hand on their knee or a hug held in too tight.
It's... What's their sense when you talk to them about this and now they're talking to you and they're acknowledging this kind of thing happens, suggesting that they know it's not the right kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? What do they think they, you know, what to do about that, or what goes through their mind about what should I do next?
What I've been hearing is, you know, they can't really do a lot about it. They kind of just have to, you know, put up with it. And that's just, you know, I was talking to one veteran lobbyist and she said, you know, she tells younger lobbyists that, you know, this is part of the job and you do have to deal with it, but don't report it because it then becomes a he said, she said sort of situation. And it's difficult, you know, to pinpoint, you know, what exactly happened because they might not have proof of, you know, a hug held in too tight with someone's hands down a little bit lower than they should have been. So, you know, they don't quite know how to deal with it other than, you know, talking with other women in the building just to see how they can, you know, deal with it.
And navigate the situation. Yeah. Jeff, you've also been looking into this. What's the process like just in terms of getting people to talk on the record?
It's been challenging to an extent. I was just doing a little tally here before, and I'm, by my quick count, I've talked with 17 people so far, lawmakers, current and former, lobbyists, current and former, and several current staff members. For lobbyists, this is an issue of, you know, really navigating a professional landscape where you need to have good relationships with lawmakers in order to be able to do your job. If you're a lawmaker, and I've spoken with male and female lawmakers, Republican and Democratic lawmakers, but, you know, this is such a hierarchical system. You don't want to be in bad graces with leadership. And, you know, candidly, even for me, it's you're thinking about this story, and you're thinking, well, how am I going to tell this story? Obviously, I want to be fair. That's the most important thing. But you worry, all right, are you going to tick anybody off in doing this story? So that element of it is pervasive. You want to be right. But in talking with folks, their biggest concern is making people upset.
Well, and again, getting back to what Lauren was just saying, and I wonder how much of this factors into it, even for you, too, as reporters, being fair about it becomes a problem when it is one word against another and when it is becomes a subjective judgment about how far is too far.
And I also would say, and I'll try to get at this delicately, what we've seen, at least in my opinion, with Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein and Roy Moore and Al Franken, these are egregious examples. At the State House, there's been one egregious example that I found from 10 years ago, and it was a lawmaker who they dealt with pretty quickly. There was another one from 20 years ago. But a lot of what we're hearing, what I'm hearing, to reiterate what Lauren's saying, is this nature of handsiness and a good old boys club and hugs that are unwanted and touches on shoulders and, well, darling, you look pretty today. That's a great skirt. Things like that. I mean, I've heard that myself. That's a little bit more subjective. For some people, understandably, that makes them extremely uncomfortable. And I've talked to other folks who say, well, women, lobbyists and lawmakers, who say, you know, that's not really that bad. And one thing I've noticed is that oftentimes that falls along a generational line.
Lauren, are you hearing that as well, that nobody is, or that people are or are not reporting the kinds of harassment that are making the headlines right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is what I'm hearing. And going off of what Jeff said, the generational thing, you know, one of the veteran lobbyists I talked to, she said the culture has gotten a little bit better over probably the past decade because of new ethics rules that have been put in place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, going off of that, yeah, there are, you know, people going in and saying, you know, your skirt looks nice today or you look good in that skirt. But a lot of people are also being very respectful because of those ethics rules. But it is still very hard to report because not everyone who works in that building is actually a state employee. And I mean, so you have people who are elected and then you have lobbyists who work for separate firms. So there's no easy way to go about navigating that situation because it's this own unique work environment.
Well, what's your experience, Lauren?
My experience is, you know, I get comments sometimes, you know, I get unwanted touches, mostly the arms around your shoulders. You know, sometimes you'll be in a press gaggle where, you know, there's three or four of us just kind of talking with a lawmaker and all of a sudden he'll be making a point and he'll, you know, put his arm around me, but not even like bat an eye at the other two or three men in the group. But I mean, I haven't had anything awful happen to me besides just those small touches. And I mean, I have had female lawmakers, you know, touch my knee or like tell me my necklace looks nice and like go up and touch my necklace. But I mean, again, that's also kind of a different culture of, you know, those were older lawmakers and not necessarily people who were in their 20s or 30s or even 40s.
Why does that make a difference?
I think it's just going back to the generational thing, like it wasn't as clearly delineated, I think, in the 80s and 90s, where that was still the big, you know, good old boy culture of, you know, the older men and the older women kind of look at you kind of like a child or a grandkid. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of not necessarily baby you, but I think that's where it comes from.
Well, Jeff, what do we do now? I mean, because what we're getting to now is this level of consciousness raising. We're becoming more aware. We're getting woke. We get the idea now. What does this mean for reporting going forward? I mean, yeah, you've heard stories. I'm sure people warn you, or there's a story about watch out for that guy, and that's been passing around the halls for a long time. You pass it off because maybe even the person who told you that didn't look like they were taking it terribly seriously. Does this change things for you now as a reporter?
Good question. I'll share this quick anecdote. When I first went over there, I had a colleague in the press corps, not Lauren, full disclosure, Lauren wasn't there at the time. I had a colleague in the press corps, got on an elevator with her, and a lawmaker put his hand on her shoulder early on and said, "Well, darling, don't you look nice today? How are you?" That was early. And that was a welcome to this culture for me. It made me extremely uncomfortable. We got off the elevator and I said, "Hey, whoa, like that wasn't right. Do you want to do something about that? Like, what can we do here?" Mm-hmm. And no, we didn't do anything about that. It certainly is challenging. To answer your question, I don't know if anything is necessarily different right now. I think there is more of a dialogue going on. I think people are perhaps paying more attention to it, and maybe people are thinking twice or three times about their behavior before they, you know, put an arm out or make a comment that might make some of us go, "Ooh, that wasn't appropriate."
Well, among the people you spoke with was Tessie Castillo, who is a lobbyist and works for the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition. So let's hear her thoughts as when you asked her about this.
I also think that women speaking out about what has happened to them is going to help a lot. Just make the lawmakers think twice before they do something like that, because it seems very clear now that that's the culture and there's nothing that anyone really says about it, and so they can continue to do it with impunity.
Tessie Castillo is a lobbyist who works with the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition. I'm speaking with Jeff DeBerry, who is WNC Capitol Bureau Chief, and Lauren Horsch, reporter for the NC Insider, which takes a look at state government news service. Well, Jeff, is it impunity? Are there processes in place? If I had a complaint, where would I go? Is there some way the legislature does handle these?
I'll put that in the words of Tessie Castillo, who you just heard from. I asked her about it. I said, she told me several stories. And as you've alluded to here, Lauren and myself and other reporters are working on stories at this point, and those aren't quite ready because we want to make sure that we give everybody an opportunity to defend themselves. But names have been named. I asked Tessie at one point, she told me about a story of a lawmaker walking up to her in the hallway and giving her a back massage. She didn't even see who it was. Initially. And I said, did you report that? Did you tell anyone? She said, "No, I didn't tell anyone at the time. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do." So I think that gets it at your question there. I do want to note that I had a long conversation with her, and certainly appreciate everyone that's been able or has been willing to chat on the record or off the record or not for attribution, whatever it's been, because it really helps us understand and get some of the level of nuance and context. Tessie did note that most of the lawmakers that she works with have always been appropriate. And I do think that's an important point. At the same time, there was a Republican lawmaker she named who said, you know, she's not comfortable going in their office. A Democratic lawmaker, she pointed out, who has made multiple inappropriate comments to her and has made her feel incredibly uncomfortable. And that's the only one other thing I would say is that came up several times when speaking with women. There are several lawmakers whose offices they do not go into. And I learned of at least two different lobbying firms where there's a policy and women don't go into lawmakers' offices alone. It's what they have. They have a buddy system. So we're continuing to learn more, and this conversation continues.
Well, we will continue it with you and others. Jeff DeBerry, WNC Capitol Bureau Chief, and Lauren Horsch, a reporter for the NC Insider, a news service that focuses on state government. Thank you both for being on the program.
Good to be here.
Glad to be here.
Just ahead, the music of Tim Fine on the Tim Fain is coming up on the State of Things. Tim Fine is next week. Tim Fain on this show minutes from now. Don't go away.